Is climate change settled science or a leap of faith? Welcome to Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we invite Cal Beisner to return to the program. Dr. Cal Beisner, he's written an article, in fact, called Climate Change, a Leap of Faith? Question mark. Cal, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Jerry. It's always good to be with you.
Okay, so set up the context here. I understand there was a recent symposium at Duke.
Yeah, back on, it was April 6th, there was a panel discussion at Duke University titled Climate Change, Not a Leap of Faith. And among the event hosts was a group called Young Evangelicals for Climate Action, which is an offshoot of the Evangelical Environmental Network. They and three other organizations together, all of them attached to Duke, hosted four speakers, all of whom were clearly believers in dangerous man-made global warming, so dangerous, in fact, that we really need to spend trillions of dollars trying to mitigate it, even though those trillions of dollars might instead be spent to provide better food, clothing, shelter, medical care, disease prevention, and so on for the poor around the world. And as I read their announcement about this, with their particular main speaker being Dr. Catherine Hayhoe, an evangelical who's a professor of political science and director of the Climate Science Center at Texas Tech University. As I read this, I kept thinking to myself, gee, you know, why did they title this Climate Change Not a Leap of Faith? It just made me wonder, is that meant to present climate change as somehow in contrast with religious faith in general, or maybe Christian faith in particular, since, after all, an awful lot of people nowadays think of religion as irrational or irrational and really not based on any kind of evidence, but simply as a leap of faith. And in doing so, they're, excuse me, they're following the thought of the 19th century philosopher, Danish philosopher, Søren Kierkegaard, who basically said, you know, the Christian faith is not a matter of good evidence or anything like that. It's it is a blind leap of faith, and that's how we show that we really take God seriously, is that we're willing to do things that are totally contrary to reason. And so I wondered, you know, is that kind of the point of their title, that they're wanting to say climate change, belief in climate change, is not a leap of faith? It is thoroughly rational, whereas belief in religion is.
Well, okay, here's the question. I mean, in the minds of the average American, I think most people view this issue, you know, they do not make it a high priority, even if they think there is such a thing as man-made global warming or man-made climate change. It's just not high in the priority, and I'm glad for that on the one hand. On the other hand, address the science itself. I mean, some people might think this is settled science, but that's not true.
Well, it's certainly not true. And in fact, really, there's no such thing as settled science.
Yeah, you're right. That's an oxymoron. You're right.
Yeah. When it comes to something like gravity, that's, you know, we don't even call that settled science simply because the conversation has largely stopped as to whether there is such a thing as gravity. Now, exactly how gravity works, why it works exactly as it is, physicists continue to discuss that. But settled science is really somewhat oxymoronic, because the whole heart of science is the constant questioning, constantly testing things anew. And in fact, in that respect, it really reflects the Christian value of seeking for truth and testing things. The Apostle Paul told us in 1 Thessalonians 5:21 to test all things, hold fast what is good, which is part of what really distinguishes real Christian faith from the blind leap of faith that Søren Kierkegaard talked about. Because in Christianity, you have a religion that claims to be thoroughly rational, not rationalistic, but thoroughly rational. So that, for instance, the Apostle John wrote that John the Baptist came to bear witness, and that term denoted giving testimony in a trial to establish fact. He came to bear witness to Jesus, and that Jesus did many signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. The Apostle Peter said, regard Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you a reason for the hope that is in you. So the Christian faith is by no means irrational or arational, and it does call for testing, constant testing, and that's mm-hmm. really what gave rise to science. Science arose historically in just one place and at just one time in medieval Europe, and that's because that culture was imbued with the Christian worldview that says that a rational God designed an orderly universe to be understood and managed by rational men and women made in God's image. And so then, for the folks who believe in this catastrophic, anthropogenic, dangerous, man-made global warming, to say the science is settled on this is, I think, really quite revealing of the fact that they themselves have retreated from the biblical worldview and from the key to science, the heart of science. Paul's test all things, hold fast what is good, is reflected in the famous statement by the Nobel Prize-winning physicist Richard Feynman, that when we look for a law, something to explain how nature does what it does, first we guess, then we make predictions based on the guess, then we do observations, whether in the laboratory or out in the real world. And if the observations contradict the predictions, then the theory is wrong. And it doesn't matter how smart you are, or how many people agree with you, or how beautiful you are, or how beautiful the idea is. If it disagrees with experiment, it's wrong. Well, with climate change, we have something that has clearly disagreed with experiment.
Is it true that since 1997, temperatures around the world have actually shown the world not getting warmer, but actually getting a little bit cooler?
Yeah, essentially there has been no statistically significant change in global average temperature, either upward or downward, from early 1997, basically about probably the month of February 1997, until the end of 2015. Now, the last 3 months have been extraordinarily warm because there has been going on an extraordinarily powerful El Nino southern oscillation. This is in the tropical South Pacific. And it's a cyclical thing. It's what drove extraordinarily warm temperatures in 1998, making that the warmest year in the satellite temperature measuring record that goes from 1979 to the present. 1998 was the warmest year until 2015, and 2015 probably topped it according to the satellite measures, but that also was because of an extraordinarily strong El Nino. Now, by the way, it's just recently come out that La Nina, which is the opposite sort of situation in the tropical South Pacific, a cooling cycle instead, La Nina has actually begun early this time and seems to be starting to drive temperatures back downward sooner than a lot of folks thought. At any rate, leaving out these peaks and valleys driven by El Nino and La Nina, the long-term temperature data indicate no statistically significant warming since early 1997, which none of the climate models, which are the only basis for fears of dangerous global warming, none of those climate models predicted that. And in fact, on average, the climate models predict about 2 to 3 times the warming actually observed over the relevant period. And 95% of them predict more warming than is actually observed, which indicates that the errors are not random, but are driven by some kind of bias, whether it's honest or it's just simple, mistake. It's written right into the models themselves. Wow. The models cannot give us a firm basis for belief in dangerous high temperatures in the future because the models don't match reality. As Feynman would put it, the hypothesis, the theory, was contradicted by the observations, so the theory is wrong, period.
Okay, we're talking right now with Dr. Cal Beissner on Vocal Point. Dr. Cal Beissner is with the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, cornwallalliance.org. He wrote an article that was published on the stream called Climate Change, A Leap of Faith. I'll tell you one thing, Cal. I think it was a brilliant PR move to change the name global warming to climate change, because there's always climate change. It's called the weather.
True.
Yeah. Now, in fact, the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change was named long before that big change in public rhetoric happened. It's borne that name since 1989. The UN Framework Convention on Climate Change was named that way. But the main spokespeople for those organizations and for the whole global warming alarmist meme, so to speak, did in public statements consistently use the term global warming for about the first 15 years. And then starting around 2008-09, when it became clear that there was a lengthening period of no warming going on, they started realizing, gee, if there's no warming, it's going to be hard to get people to believe in global warming, so maybe we better use the more neutral term climate change. The fact is that there's a lot of deception that goes on by the use of rhetoric. Climate change, of course, is neutral. That can include warming and cooling. It can include more and less rainfall, more and fewer storms, etc. But the way they use it, the term is actually a code word for dangerous man-made global warming. And then, you know, they will also say, look, anybody who questions dangerous man-made global warming denies that human activity has anything to do with it. Well, that's not true. I know literally scores and scores of climate scientists and physicists and geologists and so on who deny dangerous man-made global warming, but who do affirm that human activity does influence global average temperature. Indeed, the CO2 we've added to the atmosphere probably has made it a little bit warmer now than it otherwise would have been. But the amount is so slight that it is certainly not dangerous. In fact, the total warming observed from about 1850 to now is around 8 or 9 tenths of 1 degree Celsius. That is extremely small. The normal change from cold to high temperature, low to high temperature in any given locale on any given day, is 10 to 20 times that much. The normal change from summer warmth to winter cold at any given locale around the Earth is 10, 20, 30, 40 times that much. So the appropriate response to 9 tenths of a degree of global warming is ho-hum.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what Dr. Richard Lindzen, one of the world's foremost climatologists at MIT, says. I mean, our proper response to this is, so what?
You say ho-hum, but hey-ho says, no, this is a serious problem. And I do want to ask you, since we've got to close this out, how about a Christian perspective on this? Obviously, you have some Christian people saying, this is a problem, and we're very concerned about it, especially for the indigent and the poor of the earth.
Yeah, this is what the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation labors to provide, and we've done it in a number of major papers. Our most recent one is called A Call to Truth, Prudence, and Protection of the Poor, 2014, The Case Against Harmful Climate Policies Gets Stronger. That's by a climatologist and an environmental economist who is a specialist in climate change research. And this paper shows very, very clearly, citing fully credible sources, referee journal articles and the like, shows that the warming effect of CO2 in the atmosphere is much smaller than what the alarmists claim. And it also shows that the cost of trying to reduce our CO2 emissions in order to supposedly prevent dangerous warming, but in actuality it would only prevent you know, less than a hundredth of a degree of temperature change for us to fulfill all of the Obama administration's policies,
wow.
less than a tenth of a degree to fulfill all the commitments made in Paris by the 186 nations that signed the Paris Agreement. The reality is that the cost of achieving those reductions in CO2 emissions by abandoning the use of our most abundant, affordable, reliable source of electricity, which
we're almost out of time.
Coal and natural gas,
mm-hmm.
is extremely high and would trap billions of people in poverty for decades to come.
Wow.
That need not be done.
Wow. CornwallAlliance.org for more information. Cal, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. God bless you.
Jerry, thank you. God
okay,
bless
bye-bye.
You.